Chapter 78. Alterations. So the day has come at length, Susan, apostrophe said Florence to the excellent Nipper, when we are going back to our quiet home. Apostrophe apostrophe, Susan drew in her breath with an amount of expression not easily described, further relieving her feelings with a smart cough, answered, very quiet indeed, Miss Floyd, no doubt. Excessive so. Apostrophe, when I was a child, apostrophe said Florence, thoughtfully, and after musing for some moments, did you ever see that gentleman who has taken the trouble to ride down here to speak to me, now three times, I think, Susan? Apostrophe apostrophe, three times, miss, apostrophe returned the Nipper. Once when you was out a-walking with them sked apostrophe, Florence gently looked at her, and Miss Nipper checked herself. With Sir Barnet and his lady, I mean to say, miss, and the young gentleman. And two evenings since then. Apostrophe, when I was a child, and when company used to come to visit Papa, did you ever see that gentleman at home, Susan? Apostrophe, apostrophe asked Florence. Well, miss, apostrophe returned her maid, after considering, I really couldn't say I ever did. When your poor dear ma died, Miss Floyd, I was very new in the family, you see, and my element. The Nipper bridled, as opining that her merits had been always designedly extinguished by Mr. Dombey. Was the floor below the attics? Apostrophe, to be sure, apostrophe said Florence, still thoughtfully. You are not likely to have known who came to the house. I quite forgot. Apostrophe, not, miss, but what we talked about the family and visitors. Apostrophe said Susan, and but what I heard much said, although the nurse before Mrs. Richards make unpleasant remarks, when I was in company, and hint at little pictures, but that could only be attributed. Poor thing, apostrophe observed Susan, with composed forbearance, to habits of intoxication, for which she was required to leave, and did. Apostrophe, Florence, who was seated at her chamber window, with her face resting on her hand, sat looking out, and hardly seemed to hear what Susan said, she was so lost in thought. At all events, miss, apostrophe said Susan, I remember very well, that this same gentleman, Mr. Carker, was almost, if not quite, as great a gentleman with your papa then, as he is now. It used to be said in the house then, miss, that he was at the head of all your pa's affairs in the city, and managed the whole, and that your pa minded him more than anybody, which, begging your pardon, Miss Floyd, he might easy do, for he never minded anybody else. I knew that, picture as I might have been. Apostrophe, Susan Nipper, with an injured remembrance of the nurse before Mrs. Richards, emphasized picture strongly. And that Mr. Carker has not fallen off, miss, apostrophe she pursued, but has stood his ground, and kept his credit with your pa, I know from what is always said among our people by that perch, whenever he comes to the house, and though he's the weakest weed in the world, Miss Floyd, and no one can have a moment's patience with the man, he knows what goes on in the city tolerable well, and says that your pa does nothing without Mr. Carker, and leaves all to Mr. Carker, and acts according to Mr. Carker, and has Mr. Carker always at his elbow, and I do believe, that he believes that washiest of perches. That after your pa, the Emperor of India is the child unborn to Mr. Carker. Apostrophe, not a word of this was lost on Florence, who, with an awakened interest in Susan's speech, no longer gazed abstractedly on the prospect without, but looked at her, and listened with attention. Yes, Susan, apostrophe she said, when that young lady had concluded. He is in Papa's confidence, and is his friend, I am sure. Apostrophe, Florence's mind ran high on this theme, and had done for some days. Mr. Carker, in the two visits with which he had followed up his first one, had assumed a confidence between himself and her a right on his part, to be mysterious and stealthy, in telling her that the ship was still unheard of a kind of mildly restrained power and authority over her that made her wonder, and caused her great uneasiness. She had no means of repelling it, or of freeing herself from the web he was gradually winding about her, for that would have required some ardent knowledge of the world, opposed to such a dress as his, and Florence had none. True, he had said no more to her than that there was no news of the ship, and that he feared the worst. But how he came to know that she was interested in the ship, and why he had the right to signify his knowledge to her, so insidiously and darkly, troubled Florence very much. This conduct on the part of Mr. Carker, and her habit of often considering it with wonder and uneasiness, began to invest him with an uncomfortable fascination in Florence's thoughts. A more distinct remembrance of his features, voice, and manner, which she sometimes courted, as a means of reducing him to the level of a real personage, capable of exerting no greater charm over her than another, did not remove the vague impression. And yet he never frowned, or looked upon her with an air of dislike or animosity, but was always smiling and serene. Again, Florence, in pursuit of her strong purpose with reference to her father, and her steady resolution to believe that she was herself unwittingly to blame for their so cold and distant relations, would recall to mind that this gentleman was his confidential friend, and would think, with an anxious heart, could her struggling tendency to dislike and fear him be a part of that misfortune in her, which had turned her father's love adrift, and left her so alone? She dreaded that it might be, sometimes believed it was. Then she resolved that she would try to conquer this wrong feeling, persuaded herself that she was honored and encouraged by the notice of her father's friend, and hoped that patient observation of him and trust in him would lead her bleeding feet along that stony road which ended in her father's heart. Thus, with no one to advise her, for she could advise with no one without seeming to complain against him, gentle Florence tossed on an uneasy sea of doubt and hope. And Mr. Carker, like a scaly monster of the deep, swam down below, and kept his shining eye upon her. Florence had a new reason in all this for wishing to be at home again. Her lonely life was better suited to her course of timid hope and doubt, and she feared sometimes that in her absence she might miss some hopeful chance of testifying her affection for her father. Heaven knows, she might have set her mind at rest, poor child, on this last point, but her slighted love was fluttering within her, and, even in her sleep, it flew away in dreams, and nestled, like a wandering bird come home, upon her father's neck. Of Walter she thought often. Ah! How often, when the night was gloomy, and the wind was blowing round the house! But hope was strong in her breast. It is so difficult for the young and ardent, even with such experience as hers, to imagine youth and ardor quenched like a weak flame, and the bright day of life merging into night, at noon, that hope was strong yet. Her tears fell frequently for Walter's sufferings, but rarely for his supposed death, and never long. She had written to the old instrument maker, but had received no answer to her note, which indeed required none. Thus matters stood with Florence on the morning when she was going home, gladly, to her old secluded life. Dr. and Mrs. Blimmer, accompanied, much against his will, by their valued charge, Master Barnett, were already gone back to Brighton, where that young gentleman and his fellow pilgrims to Parnassus were then, no doubt, in the continual resumption of their studies. The holiday time was past and over. Most of the juvenile guests at the villa had taken their departure, and Florence's long visit was come to an end. There was one guest, however, albeit not resident within the house, who had been very constant in his attentions to the family, and who still remained devoted to them. This was Mr. Toots, who, after renewing, some weeks ago, the acquaintance he had had the happiness of forming with Skettles Jr., on the night when he burst the Blumberian bonds, and soared into freedom with his ring on, called regularly every other day, and left a perfect pack of cards at the hall door, so many indeed, that the ceremony was quite a deal on the part of Mr. Toots, and a hand at whist on the part of the servant. Mr. Toots, likewise, with the bold and happy idea of preventing the family from forgetting him.
But there is reason to suppose that this expedient originated in the teeming brain of the chicken,
had established a six-oared cutter, manned by aquatic friends of the chickens, and steered by that illustrious character in person, who wore a bright red fireman's coat for the purpose, and concealed the perpetual black eye with which he was afflicted, beneath a green shade. Previous to the institution of this equipage, Mr. Toots sounded the chicken on a hypothetical case, as, supposing the chicken to be enamored of a young lady named Mary, and to have conceived the intention of starting a boat of his own, what would he call that boat? The chicken replied, with divers strong asseverations, that he would either christen it Polar the Chicken's Delight. Improving on this idea, Mr. Toots, after deep study and the exercise of much invention, resolved to call his boat the Toots Joy, as a delicate compliment to Florence, of which no man knowing the parties could possibly miss the appreciation. Stretched on a crimson cushion in his gallant bark, with his shoes in the air, Mr. Toots, in the exercise of his project, had come up the river, day after day, and week after week, and had flitted to and fro, near Sir Barnet's garden, and had caused his crew to cut across and across the river at sharp angles, for his better exhibition to any lookers out from Sir Barnet's windows, and had had such evolutions performed by the Toots Joy as had filled all the neighboring part of the waterside with astonishment. But whenever he saw anyone in Sir Barnet's garden on the brink of the river, Mr. Toots always feigned to be passing there, by a combination of coincidences of the most singular and unlikely description. "How are you, Toots?" Sir Barnet would say, waving his hand from the lawn, while the artful chicken steered close inshore. "How do you, Sir Barnet?" Mr. Toots would answer, "What a surprising thing, that I should see you here." Mr. Toots, in his sagacity, always said this, as if, instead of that being Sir Barnet's house, it were some deserted edifice on the banks of the Nile, or Ganges. "I never was so surprised." Mr. Toots would exclaim. "Is Miss Dombey there?" Whereupon Florence would appear, perhaps. "Oh, Diogenes is quite well, Miss Dombey," Toots would cry. "I called to ask this morning." "Thank you very much." The pleasant voice of Florence would reply. "Won't you come ashore, Toots?" Sir Barnet would say then. "Come. You're in no hurry. Come and see us." "Oh, it's of no consequence, thank you." Mr. Toots would blushingly rejoin. "I thought Miss Dombey might like to know, that's all. Goodbye." And poor Mr. Toots, who was dying to accept the invitation, but hadn't the courage to do it, signed to the chicken, with an aching heart, and away went the Joy, cleaving the water like an arrow. The Joy was lying in a state of extraordinary splendor, at the garden steps, on the morning of Florence's departure. When she went downstairs to take leave, after her talk with Susan, she found Mr. Toots awaiting her in the drawing room. "Oh, how do you, Miss Dombey?" said the stricken Toots, always dreadfully disconcerted when the desire of his heart was gained, and he was speaking to her. "Thank you, I'm very well indeed, I hope you're the same, so was Diogenes yesterday." "You are very kind," said Florence. "Thank you, it's of no consequence," retorted Mr. Toots. "I thought perhaps you wouldn't mind, in this fine weather, coming home by water, Miss Dombey. There's plenty of room in the boat for your maid." "I am very much obliged to you," said Florence, hesitating. "I really am, but I would rather not." "Oh, it's of no consequence," retorted Mr. Toots. "Good morning." "Won't you wait and see Lady Skettles?" asked Florence, kindly. Oh no, thank you, apostrophe returned Mr. Toots, it's of no consequence at all. Apostrophe, so shy was Mr. Toots on such occasions, and so flurried. But Lady Skettles entering at the moment, Mr. Toots was suddenly seized with a passion for asking her how she did, and hoping she was very well, nor could Mr. Toots by any possibility leave off shaking hands with her, until Sir Barnet appeared. To whom he immediately clung with the tenacity of desperation. We are losing, today, Toots, apostrophe said Sir Barnet, turning towards Florence, the light of our house, I assure you, oh, it's of no consequence, I mean yes, to be sure, apostrophe faltered the embarrassed Mr. Toots. Good morning. Apostrophe, notwithstanding the emphatic nature of this farewell, Mr. Toots, instead of going away, stood leering about him, vacantly. Florence, to relieve him, bade adieu, with many thanks, to Lady Skettles, and gave her arm to Sir Barnet. May I beg of you, my dear Miss Dombey, apostrophe said her host, as he conducted her to the carriage, to present my best compliments to your dear papa? Apostrophe, it was distressing to Florence to receive the commission, for she felt as if she were imposing on Sir Barnet, by allowing him to believe, that a kindness rendered to her, was rendered to her father. As she could not explain, however, she bowed her head and thanked him, and again she thought, that the dull home, free from such embarrassments, and such reminders of her sorrow, was her natural and best retreat. Such of her late friends and companions as were yet remaining at the villa, came running from within, and from the garden, to say goodbye. They were all attached to her, and very earnest in taking leave of her. Even the household were sorry for her going, and the servants came nodding and curtsying round the carriage door. As Florence looked round on the kind faces, and saw among them those of Sir Barnet and his lady, and of Mr. Toots, who was chuckling and staring at her from a distance, she was reminded of the night when Paul and she had come from Dr. Blimmer's. And when the carriage drove away, her face was wet with tears. Sorrowful tears, but tears of consolation too, for all the softer memories connected with the dull old house to which she was returning made it dear to her, as they rose up. How long it seemed since she had wandered through the silent rooms. Since she had last crept, softly and afraid, into those her father occupied. Since she had felt the solemn, but yet soothing influence of the beloved dead in every action of her daily life. This new farewell reminded her, besides, of her parting with poor Walter. Of his looks and words that night. And of the gracious blending she had noticed in him, of tenderness for those he left behind, with courage and high spirit. His little history was associated with the old house too, and gave it a new claim and hold upon her heart. Even Susan Nipper softened towards the home of so many years, as they were on their way towards it. Gloomy as it was, and rigid justice as she rendered to its gloom, she forgave it a great deal. I shall be glad to see it again, I don't deny, miss, apostrophe said the Nipper. There ain't much in it to boast of, but I wouldn't have it. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.